So really, I suppose the initial worry that you had about maybe Bond not being the fit, once he started to work with them, once they started to play, and I'm sure once they recorded the likes of High Voltage and Dirty Deeds and stuff like that,
yeah.
It was very obvious to you then that this was the final piece of the jigsaw. And I mean...
Yeah, it didn't take long at all. I mean, he just came in and, you know, it was just, I can remember Malcolm and Angus, you know, just kind of telling me that they just kind of looked at him, you know, and said, you're it, you know, that's it. They just instantly fell in love with him. And, you know, he's just such a, you know, had such a great sense of humour and just, you know, just a whole swagger. And he was just the perfect fit for them. And, yeah.
Yeah, for someone like yourself that, you know, knew him extremely well for a number of years, I mean, the impression that I've always got as a fan and talking to other people who have met him, that he was one of the nicest people he had. He was very lovable. He was a bit of a rascal. He liked the ladies. He liked his alcohol, all of that. But you couldn't dislike him. He was just one of them people that had a twinkle in his eye and a bit of a smile that, you know, when he come into a room, you knew there was devilment, but he was likable.
Yeah, he was. He was a lovely guy. The girls loved him. You know, he would write beautiful letters to people that he met along the way, and had friends all around the world that he would write beautiful letters to, and just a gentle, very beautiful soul. But, you know, he had another side to him, which was, you know, obviously fairly destructive. And, you know, so, yeah, but yeah, he was a really lovely guy.
You know, when we're talking, just for a little while, we're talking about him on the lyrics. It was said to me on more than one occasion that Bon was a very prolific lyric writer, and that he was always writing down ideas, and he also had a pen and a jotter with him. Is that how you would have seen? Was he always writing down ideas and song lyrics?
Pretty much, I'd say so, yeah. You know, he described his lyrics as toilet poetry. You know, he just had a really, really great angle on everything. I mean, songs that really in the early days that you know, the youth of Australia particularly would relate to. Songs like She's Got the Jack, which is, of course, the jack is the terminology for gonorrhea in Australia, and used to be quite a common thing back in the days, and, you know, it was rife in the music scene, and so he wrote this song about She's Got the Jack, and that became a big sort of anthem for them in Australia. And he just picked up on things that were relevant to people, you know, people's, the youth of Australia's lives in those early days, and which ended up resonating around the world.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Michael, wouldn't it be fair to say in the early days of AC/DC, they were very much a rock and roll band. They were very much, you know, and Bon was a rock and roll star. He wasn't a metal star. He wasn't, no. He was a rocker. He actually, the first time I saw him make it, he kind of reminded me the look of him a bit like Alice Cooper. There was that kind of, he had that style, that show busy style, that glint in his eye. He was like the ringmaster, you know, coming in to entertain.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we had a television show in Australia called Countdown, and it was kind of like the Top of the Pops, you know, every week that have whoever was in, you know, happening was whatever was in the charts and so on. AC/DC were probably really emerged in Australia really pretty much as a result of being on that show almost every second week because they loved them so much. And every performance, Bon would, you know, the first performance, much to the distress of the producers of the show, Bon came out dressed up as a schoolgirl and with smoking cigarettes, you know, on while he was singing, and you know, every every performance they did on the show was something different, you know. And I because I had a club, I had a carpenter working for me, and he would make things. Like he made like a cage, and Angus came out, broke out of the cage in a gorilla outfit, you know, on one occasion. And on the next occasion, we had a phone booth, and Angus came out of the phone booth dressed up as Superman. And then we did a Spider-Man one, and yeah, we used to do all these crazy things on a Steve Lee show, and Bon and Angus were, you know, at the epicenter of all that craziness, and they just had a great rapport and a great communication between them, and just, yeah, there was just such great showmanship qualities.
I think you know what you're saying is that there just was a chemistry there, and the music was brilliant, but it was about getting them noticed, about people talking about them, to set them aside from everything else. Because there's many fine bands out there, but AC/DC were just that little bit different, with the Schoolboy racing around with a Gibson SG on him, and then this other guy, the mean rock and roller that had a heart of gold, that really, you know, he could sing, he could snarl them vocals out, but then he put that big cheesy grin on him, or that smile. You knew he had a good heart, and I think that endeared them to so many people. Could I ask you, but now I know you believe in the band right from the start, but at what point did the band, from, say, from a commercial point of view, or even from your own point of view, say, this is it, they've clicked? Was there an album or a stage where you just knew this was going to go really well?
Yeah, I mean, really, once the lineup got together, you know, with Bon, you know, and Phil Rudd, Mark, and every, you know, the sort of final classic sort of lineup, you know, the songs that were coming out, you know, High Voltage, TNT, and then Long Way to the Top, If You Want to Rock and Roll, and all those big early hits that they had. It just kind of, yeah, the songwriting quality was just so good, and their performances were just so good. I think I just kind of really, you know, in my heart, I believe that, you know, there was just something there that would eventually just catch on around the world. And you know, I'd had some experience in going over there to England with Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs in the early days, and some experience. And so, I mean, the way that evolved is, you know, I with Billy Thorpe and the Aztecs, when I did the deal with Rack Records, Mickey Most, I had a machine which opened up as a briefcase, and it opened up and it turned into a little video thing. It was probably the first video presentation of a band's video to a record label, and that's how I got the deal. So I left that behind, and my sister lived in London. And when I came back to Australia, I left that machine behind. And so when we made a really great video, the first really great video of AC/DC was a live video that we made from one of their big shows. I sent that over to my sister, and in the format that fitted that machine. And she was in the music industry over there, looking after, she worked for Bob Marley's manager, and amongst other things. And they represented a guy called Rabbit, who was going to play with Backstreet Crawler, on the tour, Paul Kossoff's band. And so she had a meeting with Atlantic about that. And when she went to the meeting, she took the machine with us, and she told me she was going to see Phil Carson at Atlantic Records. And I said, take the machine and show him the band. So she did that. And next minute, I'm at my club in Melbourne, I've got Phil Carson from Atlantic Records in London on the phone, telling me that he's just fallen in love with the band. You know, that's kind of how all that worked. Not sure how we got to this particular. What was your original question?
Well, you know what? Because I'm a big fan of the band myself, Michael. And I have the albums on Atlantic. It's really lovely to hear the pieces of that, how they become to be signed to Atlantic. It's brilliant. Yeah. It's honestly, to me, I'm enjoying this interview so much because you put it together in such an eloquent way that it's just lovely. Any AC/DC fan listening to this is going to love every word that's coming out. Now, that was the great times and everything was going really well. And I know you're with the band till pretty close to when Bond died. Tell me something.
Yeah.
Michael, because you were so close to the band and because you're a very artistic person, did you ever sense or feel that perhaps that maybe Bond was maybe, was he slipping a little bit or was his health or life in danger? Did you ever feel that, or does everything just seem to be coming well, going on so well, and that this came out of the blue where this just seemed to happen? I just wondered, you know, how you felt about that closer to the time.
Yeah, look, Bon, was very, very much a guy who he lived life to the fullest. He didn't hold back. He loved his alcohol, participated, you know, not in any, you know, sort of heavy duty drug thing, but, you know, party drugs. He always used to say that he would probably not last too long in this world, that he wanted to be a great looking corpse, and, you know, jokes like that. So I think he had an inclination that, you know, that he was just going to, you know, live life to the fullest, and whatever the consequences of that meant, you know, then so be it, you know. He kind of went down. I suppose it's fair to say he was a little bit of a worry to the young brothers who, felt, you know, that his lifestyle, you know, wasn't really great, you know, for the longevity of the band. But they loved him so much that, you know, it was what it was, you know. And I think he just had that inkling that, you know, that his life wasn't going to go forever, you know.
I think, I suppose you're trying to say, Michael, is look, everybody knew, including Bond, that the way he lived, born the candle at both ends, that it probably meant he wasn't going to live to receive his pension, but he preferred to live that lifestyle, to enjoy every moment, and in other words, probably that kind of lifestyle was lived for most of his time with the band, and it was just unfortunately one of those occasions and times. Well, the odds were stacked against him. If you do things enough times, sometimes it's not going to work out.
Yeah, that's true. The thing with Bon is he could be as outrageously, you know, sort of out of it in his own lifestyle, but he would never ever let anyone down professionally. You know, he would always be where he's supposed to be, you know, on time. Never once did I ever hear of him ever disappointing them, you know, on any of those levels. You know, he was always able to write the lyrics for the recordings that were about to take place, and he was a professional very much a professional, you know, guy on that level.
Well, I think, you know, and again, as I'm speaking as someone that was a fan of them from the early stages, I think every AC/DC fan in the world loved Bon. We all loved him because he was the heart and soul of the band, and the lyrics, I mean, I don't think once Bon departed the band, they had huge success, and the likes of Back in Black and a whole lot of other albums sold millions and millions, and we still love them. But there was a certain magic when Bon was there, the lyrics, they were just special. And I think, you know, that stays with every one of us that loves the band.
Yeah. I mean, as you say, I mean, Brian, brought a different kind of vibe to the band, and was, you know, what he does is great, and they had enormous success. But there was something very unique and special about Bon.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I suppose, yes, the main part of this interview was going to be, of course, about AC/DC, but I think it's only fair to point out to the listeners that you're still very much involved in the music business, and I think you actually have a consultancy business and you work with artists and bands, and I think you manage some artists at the moment. So I suppose I'd like to take you up to the present day now as to what's Michael Browning doing now or what's happening at the minute, and let just so as you know what who you're working and what's happening right now.
Okay. Yeah, well, post my relationship with AC/DC, I set up a record label called Deluxe Records, assigned NXS, and we had enormous success with them. After that, there was a whole run of fairly successful bands, particularly in Australia, another band called Noiseworks, which probably, which made certain inroads internationally, but not huge. And I've just kind of continued having an interest in developing young bands and consulting. I've got a couple of bands at the moment that I'm working on, one called The Witchy Now, that we're having quite a lot of success with internationally through streaming. They're just young guys. They're kind of like the Black Sabbath influence version, of a Greta Van Fleet. They're all young 18, 19 year old guys, and I've really got a huge level of confidence that they're going to really do something. I've got another band out of Melbourne called Empirical Prey, who again, they're a slightly older band, but they have a very, very modern, kind of a Muse type sort of band, that are a little, they've got old, classic rock old style Queen, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin influences into a very modern kind of thing like Muse. I've got a couple of really good projects going. I'm sort of just haven't lost my passion for that, for doing that. I've lost my passion for wanting to be on the road, living in cheap hotels for half the year. But on the creative side, I'm really still quite active and interested in making things work for the bands that I sign up.
You know, it's quite obvious to me speaking with you during this interview that, you have a very special talent for seeing potential people, with the bands that you've worked in the past, including AC/DC. And I'm quite sure that talent is still very much to the fore. And I know the names you've mentioned there, I'm sure that there's going to be great, great success for them in the future. And the world needs people like you. It needs people out there to recognise talent, and not alone to recognise it, but to be able to channel a path for those people to help them on their journey and make their dreams come through. And I think it's so evident to me that you've been able to do that over and over. And yes, AC/DC was certainly a big one, as was NXS and others. And even in the earlier stages, Python, Lee Jackson, you've been involved with people that have had huge success. And, for me, speaking with you, it's been such a privilege, Michael, because the musicians are, of course, the musicians are important, and we love them and we love the music that we play. But it wasn't for the Michael Brownings, the Epsteins of this world and all those people that brought such magnificent artists to the attention of the world, you know, you're such an important part of what makes the music business so special. So we will talk about, we may not do it now, but we will talk afterwards when we're off air about selecting some tracks. Because normally if it's an artist, they'll play some tracks during, they'll split the interview into a few segments. We'll talk about that because you probably will have some selections maybe from a number of people you've worked with. So we'll chat about that and we'll put it together later. But at the minute, I just want to say a huge thank you for taking the time to speak with me here on the show. It's been really a special interview and it's given, I think, not alone myself, but the listeners an insight into, you know, how the business works. And certainly if you're an AC/DC fan, you've heard some very special connections on the interview about how the important things in the band's career happened and how you were instrumental in making them happen. So, Michael, thank you so much on behalf of myself. Colm, the producer, tore it up, big AC/DC fan too, as is everyone here at Radio Home of Rock. We just want to say thank you so much, and we'll be following your progress, and certainly the bands that you're looking after, we'll certainly be keeping connected with yourself and helping to get the message across and play the music to the people that want to hear good music. Thank you, thank you so much, Michael.
That's great. Thank you, Jerry. It's been a pleasure, and I've really enjoyed talking to you. It's been great. Thank you very much.